cameras after three, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Text 34. Yajesho Palata Devi,
Yajesho Palata Devi,
Maya Vaishara Dimati,
Maya Vaishara Dimati,
Sampara Eveti Vidur,
Sampara Eveti Vidur,
Mahimni Sve Mahiyate,
Mahimni Sve Mahiyate,
Yajesho Palata Devi,
Yajesho Palata Devi,
Maya Vaishara Dimati,
Maya Vaishara Dimati,
Sampana Eveti Vidur,
Sampana Eveti Vidur,
Mahimni Sve Mahiyate,
Mahimni Sve Mahiyate,
Yajesho Palata Devi,
Yajesho Palata Devi,
Maya Vaishara Dimati,
Maya Vaishara Dimati,
Sampana Eveti Vidur, Mahimni Sve Mahiyate, Yadi, if however, Esha, they, Uparata, subsided, Devi Maya, illusory energy, Vaisharadi,
full of knowledge,
Mati, enlightenment, Sampanna, enriched with, Eva,
certainly,
Iti, thus, Vidu, being cognizant of, Mahimni, in the glories, Sway, of the self, Mahiyate, being situated in. Translation. If the illusory energy subsides, and the living entity becomes fully enriched with knowledge by the grace of the Lord, then he becomes at once enlightened with self-realization and thus becomes situated in his own glory. Purport. Because the Lord is absolute transcendence, all of his forms, names, pastimes, attributes, associates, and energies are identical with him. His transcendental energy acts according to his omnipotency. The same energy acts as his external, internal, and marginal energies, and by his omnipotency, he can perform anything and everything through the agency of any of the above energies. He can turn the external energy into internal by his will. Therefore, by his grace, the external energy, which is employed in illusioning those living beings who want to have it, subsides by the will of the Lord in terms of repentance and penance for the conditioned soul. And the very same energy then acts to help the purified living being make progress on the path of self-realization. The example of electrical energy is very appropriate in this connection. The expert electrician can utilize the electrical energy for both heating and cooling by adjustment only. Similarly, the external energy, which now bewilders the living being into continuation of birth and death, is turned into internal potency by the will of the Lord to lead the living being to eternal life. When a living being is thus graced by the Lord, he is placed in his proper constitutional position to enjoy eternal spiritual life. Translation again. If the illusory energy subsides and the living entity becomes fully enriched with knowledge by the grace of the Lord, then he becomes at once enlightened with self-realization and thus becomes situated in his own glory. Om Ajnana Timanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Manitam Yena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha. You're hearing that Krishna has one energy which acts in different ways. Actually, there's simply the Supreme Spirit Krishna and his spiritual energy. This is stated in the Vishnu Purana, Vishnu Shakti Pada Prokta. All the departments of the Lord's energy are actually one, Vishnu Shakti, the potency of the Lord. But the Lord definitely has this potency acting in three different ways. As the spiritual potency, which also means the living entities, and as the external energy. So you have the internal potency, which causes devotional service and sponsors all the spiritual happenings in Krishna's pastimes, and also carries along the devotees who are performing devotional service. And then there's the external energy, avijja karma sangyana, the potency that plunges you into ignorance. And living entities, they're the marginal potency. They're spiritual, but they can choose this side, that side. Marginal means like the beach. Sometimes it's covered by water, sometimes not. Some living entities are sometimes in the external energy and sometimes in the internal potency. You can choose. Now, you cannot go around saying that everything is spiritual. And so, because definitely, for real, Krishna has some of his spiritual energy acting in an external way, so that when you encounter it in an unauthorized way, you get bewildered. This is the point. When you encounter the external energy of the Lord in an unauthorized way, that way for everyone. As Prabhupada writes in the purport, this is a very deep point, which you may meditate on for many years. The external energy, which now bewilders the living being into continuation of birth and death, is turned into internal potency by the will of the Lord to lead the living being to eternal life. Now just think what this means. The same energy that is causing you so much trouble now, the same waves of illusion that are causing you to identify with your body and your bodily and mental desires, that same energy can turn into something that takes you back to Godhead. How can that be? You mean to tell me this overpowering material energy that we're drowning in, always gasping for air, or if we're really covered over, we're so sunk into the ocean of material existence that we think it's normal. It's like one devotee was telling us at one of our evening programs at the New Loft. She visits persons who tried to practice Krishna consciousness a bit, and they all tell her, "We don't chant Hare Krishna, but yeah, everything's all right." And she can see they're suffering, but still, they feel it. Everything's all right. This is the benediction of surrendering to Maya. The grace of Maya. You suffer so much and get to feel that everything is okay. Or, even though I'm suffering now, things will be better. This illusory energy is an extraordinary problem for us. We can't cope with it. In order to be Krishna conscious, you have to admit, I can't cope with the illusory energy. I can't cope with this world. That humility has to be there. Then, in that state of material exhaustion, you can properly hear about the remedy. Materialists, they criticize. You can't cope with the world? Just me. That's the whole thing about you Krishna conscious people. You can't cope with our wonderful world. They think like that. And we say, what is so great about your world? Even if we wanted to cope with it, as you say, you're faulting us for not coping with the world. But what's so great about it? We don't see anything that an intelligent person would want to cope with. But when you're proud, even the most foolish things in your life swell your head. I was telling devotees in Wellington how when I was in Sydney, I was going to the swimming pool down the street from the temple, about a 10-minute drive. So it was during the Christmas holidays. And it's interesting, whenever you go swimming, I have to do that for exercise. Prabhupada said, as you get older, you have to put more time into your body, the machine. It's like you have an old car, you've got to put more time into it. When you have a new car, you know, you don't need to care for it so much. Just like in New Zealand, I think you've got to get your warrant of fitness for an old car every 6 months. So similarly, when you've got these old bodies, you've got to always check your warrant of fitness. It's one of the austerities. Devotees generally, they either ignore their body or else they get too much into it. But to try to hit the mark in the middle, it's not easy. It takes intelligence. It's just like eating. Either a devotee eats too much or he doesn't eat anything at all. So Krishna says in the Gita, you can't be a yogi if you eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. So anyway, I was going to get my exercise. And I like to watch the people when they're coming to the pool, not when they're in the pool, because that's such a good site for renunciation, but when they're coming to the pool, when I'm in the pool, I just got my tinted, you know, goggles on and just looking at the bottom of the pool. And but I look at them when they're coming up to pay at the booth before they go and change. And it's always quite educational. It's one, you can just see the attitudes. One family, see if I can capture it properly. I was speaking about in Wellington and had 10 crying tears of laughter. So, it was a man about 38, his wife must have been about 38. And I have to say, I mean, devotees, we're not the body. And devotees are spiritually beautiful. Regardless of how their body looks, you'd never think of a devotee as being ugly. But I have to say, this couple was ugly. I mean, it's amazing. You just never think of a devotee as ugly, no matter how deformed the body is. But these are materialists with no devotional service, and they were just truly ugly. But they were, I could just see what they were thinking. Well, I had to marry someone. And so, you know, we have to do our thing for society, and we are a family. This is my ugly wife. This is my ugly wife. But, you know, we are a family unit. And we should be respected and looked upon with envious eyes. And what are we doing today? We are taking our two children to the pool on the Christmas holidays. And they did it with such a air, like this is a great event. The man, he was very proud. I could get from his attitude that he was probably something like a guy who worked at, in a parts inventory at a car dealership or something like that. Maybe a bus driver. So he was very proud. Come on, children. You know, you can just see his attitude. We're a great day, a holiday. We're going to the chlorine pool. And it's a long walkway down to the pool, and because it's a salt water pool, although it's chlorine, it's right on, it takes water from the ocean. So they're walking down the walkway, and the kids are screaming with delight. And now, Oscar, I told you, we're going to have fun, and you should behave yourself. You know, Oscar is just, the pool, we're swimming. And the father's chastising him, don't run ahead, Oscar. I told you, we're coming here to have fun. And you will behave yourself because we're going to have fun. Yes, father. Yes, father. What kind of fun is this? So they get to the booth to pay. And the man he just totally blew my mind. I could see he was just some kind of empowered clerk. Because he just went up to the window and said to the lady, four swims, two adults, two children, four showers. He just rattled it off like that, the perfect matzo. Four swims, two adults, two children, four showers. She was like, what's that like? I mean, he had it completely together. Like he was reciting some aphorism from the Gata Sutra or something. I just looked at him. And his wife kind of caught me looking at him in surprise, and she had a smile on her face. That's my Herbert. He's so together. And the guy, you could see he was feeling a bit proud, and he could spit out a mantra like that. Four swims, two adults, two children, four showers. and very carefully pulled out, you know, his $15 or so for this great holiday, and gave the lady the $15. She gave him back his change, and he very quickly but carefully counted, the huge amount he got back as change. It's all correct, and his wife was watching. Oh, my Herbert, he's so competent. Yeah, he's not getting shortchanged. He counted every one of those $3 of change and make sure it was all exact. And I get to see he's emanating this aura of he's a maintainer. He's doing right for society. They didn't look happy at all, but they were doing the right thing. I'm taking my children swimming on the Christmas holidays. I'm paying my hard-earned money for this pool. And my children, they will behave and they will be happy. His kid Oscar is looking totally terrified. You know, he's so excited coming to swim at the pool. Now his father totally clamped down on him and told him, we're going to be happy. And the wife, she's just standing nearby, just, yes, this is what families do, and we are a good family. We've done everything that society wants for us. My husband has a very good job, parts inventory at the local Ford dealership. And I'm a housewife. I always wanted to be that, and you have to marry someone, and I do have my two children, and so we are a family unit. With, 2.2 children, and a car, and a garage, and everything is all right. And this is my husband, Herbert. And did you see the way he paid for our tickets? No one can do like Herbert. So, this is the... If my mother heard me talk about this, she would scream. And as a little kid, she always yelled at me for... She called us being cynical. I called it being realistic. But she always got on my case, and you're such a cynic. I said, this was really going on. So, anyway, this is the nature of the illusory energy. You are so enveloped in it that you don't know, and you're so concerned with the standards of the material energy. How does society think of us? How does our family think of us? This is your conception. We were hearing yesterday, and Alfina was saying that, so-called material friends, they always tell her what she called Mayavadi philosophy, that if you feel good, if it makes you feel good, do it. I said, that's not Mayavadi philosophy, that's pig philosophy. This is what the pigs are thinking. If whatever feels good, they do. They don't even have to think. It comes instinctively. Good feeling, they grunt. Oh, yes, very good. They're superior than human beings. They don't have to think about it. They don't have to buy New Age books which say if it feels good, do it. They just do it. And that's what human beings want today. They even have these bumper stickers and signs, just do it. After thousands of years of human evolution, now we have come to the supreme pinnacle. Just do it. If that's what you want, you've got the wrong body. So it's not impersonalism to think, if it feels good, do it. This is this hog's life. I was speaking at the Loft in Melbourne, and a little bit of a different style than the Australians are there. They're quite a bit different from the Kiwis. So you can kind of really stick in their face, and they like that. But you don't do that in New Zealand. You don't stick anything in anyone's face. More indirect methods. But the Aussies, they like it right in the face. So I said, they were telling me that the goal of life was to be spontaneous and enthusiastic no matter what you do. Doesn't matter what you do, just be spontaneous and enthusiastic about it. So I explained to them, well, man, it looks like you all want to be animals because the animals, they just do it. They were thinking, interesting, yeah, animals, And I said, how many of you all have done pig meditation? I mean, they thought, yes, yes. About three-fourths of them, about 15 people raised their hands. Yes, I've done pig meditation. And I said, what did you notice about pigs? They just do whatever they feel. No formalities. They eat whatever they want to. They can wallow in any filthy place. They engage in sex relations with mother, sister, daughter. No discrimination. Just if they feel like something, doing something, just roll over and they do it. So what do you think of that? They were considering. Might have some advantages. This is how low people have sunk. Not simply Australia, everywhere. People are considering the advantages of animal life. As the Bhagavatam points out, the animals know what is undesirable and what is desirable by smell. They don't have to think. It's just the smell puts them into action. So that's what human beings want today. They feel happy if they can just act in a carefree way, following their desires. And all problems have come, they think, when impediments are placed between desire and the object. Therefore, they can't understand Krishna consciousness. They think, how will you be an advanced human being when you're always controlling your senses? They don't call it controlling the senses, they call it repressing your desires. The notion, the unstated notion is that unless you let your lower self go wild, you'll never realize the upper self. Because while you're straining to understand the upper self, this is how they view the devotees. If they're all into so-called spiritual consciousness, they look at the devotees and think, all right, you're trying that high thing, but we can see that none of you have satisfied the lower, therefore all your attempts for the higher will be ruined. First, you've got to deal with the lower. Get in touch with your body. Self-realization begins with the body. If you haven't gotten in touch with the body, there's no question of being spiritually realized. This is what they did. So why do you have all these rules about sense control? You're repressing the self. First, totally get into the lower self, and then you'll rise like a... You'll rise to the top of the ocean. But if you don't deal with your lower self, you'll have a tortured existence in the name of spiritual life. Sometimes even our own devotees get influenced by this nonsense. That unless you deal with the lower self, you can't understand the higher self. Dealing with the lower self means uncontrolled senses. But Vedic life, human life means we have four ashrams, and they all are in accordance to Vedic injunctions. You can never have uncontrolled senses in any ashram. It's like Prabhupada always explained. Ashram means in relation to sex, the facts of life. All the four ashrams are in relation to sex. So, in three, you get zero. In one, it's restricted. That's the way it is. That's human life. So there's no opportunity for unrestricted sense gratification. There is facility in one ashram, a license is given. Still controlled. Therefore, generally in this world, man wants woman, woman wants man. All right, you get a license. And then you deal with these desires according to the Vedic program. And if you follow the regular principles, you will become purified. If householders follow the regular principles, Krishna takes care of their home. And if they suddenly leave their body, they'll go back to Godhead. But if householders do not follow the regular principles, they're just like lighting a fire and pouring water on it. It makes the whole thing a very frustrating affair in terms of their Krishna consciousness. You can just imagine the frustration of nicely lighting a fire, then pouring water on it, and then think, oh, I want to light it again. I want to get my Krishna consciousness together again. You light the fire, and then you pour water on it. Such a frustrating thing, dealing with wet logs, trying to ignite them. Very long and drawn-out process. So, when the Vedic system is rejected, and we engage in unrestricted sense gratification, it makes our Krishna consciousness frustrating. And then you might want to blame it on Krishna, when actually we should blame ourselves. Sex life not in accordance with religious principles brings about karma, whereas In accordance with religious principles, what does the Lord say in Bhagavad Gita? Dharma viruddha bhuteshu tamasmi paraptarshava. Krishna says, I am that activity in accordance with religious principles. There's no karma. Of course, you can read in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada several times mentions the facts, though. Whether illicit or illicit, the results of sex life are troublesome. So much responsibility, so much endeavor, so much energy to deal with the results of it. Nevertheless, for devotees who follow the regular principles, there's no karma. You're struggling so much under a heavy load of karma from the past. Why do you want more? But if your family runs according to Krishna's program, Krishna will personally watch over you. We can see so many householders who are following Krishna's instructions. How are they being maintained? It really doesn't make sense in a logical way. But Krishna is maintaining them. Actually, Krishna is maintaining everyone. But for the devotees, he takes a personal interest. He says in Bhagavad Gita, Yoga Shema Bahamyam, I preserve what you have and I bring to you what you lack. I'll personally take care of you. Because you're adhering to my program. In this purport, Prabhupada mentions that, therefore, by his grace, the external energy, which is employed in illusioning those living beings who want to have it, subsides by the will of the Lord in terms of repentance and penance for the conditioned soul. I don't know how many of us have ever thought of the need to have repentance and penance. The more you make advancement in Krishna consciousness, the more you should feel remorse at your past sinful life. You should understand the implications that unless I purify myself, I'll always be under the influence of these past sinful desires produced by past sinful activities. And even the sinful desires can still be present in a reduced way. So you want to get rid of all that. Therefore, it's very important that we endeavor to convince Krishna, please change the external energy into the internal energy. That's what Prabhupada's talking about here. The same external energy that's bewildering everyone and causing them to think, if you feel like it, do it, just do it, if it feels good, do it. That same crazy illusory energy can turn into something else by Krishna's will, if you please Krishna. Then, instead of the illusory energy pushing you down, it becomes the spiritual potency for bringing you closer to Krishna. Ultimately, all Krishna's energies are spiritual. But you prematurely can't act like that. That's why in the Gita, Krishna asks you to see the difference between matter and spirit. Although, there's no question of matter for Krishna. That's why Krishna can appear as Nitai Gaurachandra. You may see tone, but for Krishna, it's all his spiritual energy. But in the deity, as the deity, there's no Krishna inside the deity. It's not like if you go inside the stone, you know, you might find a Krishna inside. No. So we actually don't say Krishna in the deity. We say Krishna is the deity. You see stone, but that is Krishna appearing mercifully as stone for you, because that's all you can see. You can't see spirit. So Krishna says, all right, I'll come looking like stone that you can see. But because we're such great materialists, we come before the deity, then we think that's just stone. The materialists, they think idols. And the beginning devotees think, well, sure looks like an idol to me, but everyone's bowing down. I guess I'll get into it. But sure looks like stone to me. If you perform devotional service, you'll get realization that the deities are the Supreme Personality of God. Why should not Krishna be able to appear as stone? He does it for your mercy, for your benefit, and you still criticize him. Just like during a Rath Yatra, have you ever watched sometimes, how should we say it, inimical people, yeah, get their first look at the Jagannath deities? I was at Sydney Rath Yatra at Bondi Beach, and Indranunaraj was pointing out one Australian lady who was just like looking at the Jagannath deities and watching the devotees bow down, like, what is this? Can you believe it? This savage form up on a big car and these brainwashed, mindless robots bowing down. And she's just watching while munching on her Big Mac. She's like, can you believe this? And she kind of turns to her husband. He's got a can of beer in his hand with his beer belly. He's just looking. Now, how can you be religious unless you understand that the Supreme Lord can appear any way he likes? So he does that as Lord Jagannath, just to provoke, just see how I am. Any form I can take, and still I am the supreme cause of all good. It's a very wonderful daily practice for devotees to come before the deities and with remorse for their sinful activities and beg for the deities' mercy. We shouldn't come before the deities with an attitude that, all right, I'm here, I'm doing you a favor, Krishna, I came today. Be glad I came. No, we should come before the deities begging, please give me your mercy. Please change this external energy that's troubling me so much into the internal potency for taking me back to Godhead, taking me to your service. Krishna consciousness, part of it involves you being an expert beggar. We've discussed this before, I believe, but it's a subject we like to forget. Begging Krishna. From time to time in your devotional life, Krishna will show you the need to grovel before him. And the deities are there, so he can grovel. A materialist, they hate this. Groveling before these stone forms. How primitive, how aboriginal. But the Bhagavatam says that you grovel before the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is great benediction. By that, Krishna will become captured by you so much that Krishna, if he trusts you, will carry out your order. Just like after the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna is leaving Hastinapur for Dwarka, and Yudhisthira is able to stop him. My dear Krishna, you please stay a few days longer. And Krishna did. This is love. It's not that we grovel before the Lord and Krishna just treats us. Krishna is stone and treats us like we're stone. People, they have this connotation. The Old Testament God is very fierce and always getting retribution. Watch your back. You know, God is after you. No, Krishna is not like that. He mercifully comes in a form you can see him. And we should feel remorse about all the things we've done, and hopefully we're not doing anything more. And we beg Krishna, please, I have done so many horrible things. Now I'm begging that you make me suitable for your service. And even if you don't beg like that every day, there will come times in every devotee's life where you'll practically, you'll have to grovel before Krishna to hold on to your spiritual life. How do situations like that come? Krishna is the expert lover. He wants to build your love for him. He wants to test your love to see how much you really just want him. So every devotee from time to time is put in situations where unless you cry out for Krishna's mercy, you'll feel just crushed. The circumstances are so intense. But this is not karma. This is Krishna personally purifying the devotee. And so when situations like that come, seize the time. Take advantage of them. Grovel. Krishna, I can't cope with this. This is just beyond me. I can't understand it. I'm just holding on. My last breath. Pull me through this, according to your plan. If you do that, you'll always be safe. Sometimes there's such excruciating family problems, especially in Krishna consciousness association, we have the unfortunate thing of families breaking up because it's Kali Yuga. It's not Prabhupada's fault. It's not the Krishna conscious process's fault. It's just Kali Yuga, and we are refugees from Kali Yuga. It's like Prabhupada commented before his departure that so much problem in marriages because both the husband and wife had sex life before marriage. Therefore, they cannot actually be attracted. They can't remain attached to one another. It's a lost point how, maybe your grandparents remember, but how because there's chasteness before marriage, therefore all that combustion that occurs within marriage happens in a way that keeps everything together. Nowadays, there's no reason to keep marriages together. You can have loads of sense gratification outside of marriage. The government will even support you. Many times it's financially advantageous for the woman not to be married and to have children. If you separate, the woman doesn't have to worry, who will take care of me? She's an economic unit also, just like the man. Whereas in the old days, the woman was thinking, I don't like my husband, but if I leave him, who will support me? But now, both women and men are on the economic market, so economics is not a consideration. Sense gratification is not a consideration. It's available everywhere. Therefore, marriage has just become an arrangement of convenience. We've been around each other for a while, so yeah, that's what married life is like. So many young people, they say these days, we've been living together 4 years. We're not having a marriage just to give a good time to the family so they can celebrate. Forget it. In other words, that's all it's for, just so the family can get together and celebrate. We're not doing that. They can have a party on their own. And then, of course, we've mentioned several times. Actually, I hear it more in Sydney than New Zealand. Sydney's much more fast-paced. Couples, they live together for 4 years, then a baby is born, and they actually come and tell me, you know, these are like persons who frequent preaching events. They say, yeah, we've been together for 4 years. Here's the 2-year-old baby. You know, we're thinking about getting engaged. What do you think? They're serious, too. It's amazing. We're thinking about getting engaged. How do you feel about that? So all these influences we're carrying into our attempt to be Krishna conscious. And therefore, sometimes there are problems in attempts for Krishna conscious marriages. Or it's not that kind of problem, it's another kind of problem. You can't get along with the temple authorities. You just don't understand me. There's always something. And therefore, we have to know how to take shelter of Krishna. And there'll always be circumstances which can appear to be very excruciating. I can't take this. This is the ultimate. I can't take it. It's different for everybody. But the result is the same. Unless you throw yourself down before the deities and grovel and beg for Krishna's mercy, you can be swept away. Krishna will never send you a bigger challenge than you can handle. Prabhupada points out that just like a proper school teacher always gives you enough information to pass the test, similarly, Krishna always gives you enough information how to make it through any situation. But we never feel that way. We always think, this is too much for me, it's too much, I can't take it. And the back of our mind is saying, Krishna, why are you doing this to me? Instead, we should think, Krishna has given me enough to go through this situation. I don't realize it. Therefore, let me fall down before the deities and beg. This temple, you have many householders. So, household life can be very problematic. You're trying to earn a livelihood for your family, and then you get sick, and not only can you not properly earn a livelihood, but you practically can't even chance your japa, and then the baby needs a new pair of shoes, and you're trying to stay off the dole to show you're an upstanding householder, and it's really complicated. So, the deities are here. But unfortunately, so many times, when we have those kind of problems, we stay away. Prabhu, just understand, I don't have the time to come to the temple. I've got all these problems to deal with. When I sort out the problems, then I'll come. This is very bad thinking. Whether you have problems or not, come see the deities. And don't say, because I have the problems, I can't come. I have to sort them out first. No. You can't sort anything out. Krishna tells you that in the Gita. Daivyesha gunamai mama maya jatya. This external energy of mine is impossible for you to sort out. Can you stop the waves in the ocean? No. Similarly, you can't stop the problems of material life. But if you surrender to me, if you approach me, I'll take care of it all. Krishna can take care of it all to such an extent that he changes Mahamaya into Yogamaya, the external potency into the internal potency. And then the same thing that used to cause you impediment pushes you back to Godhead. Prabhupada saw that happening in his life. Things that would seem to be impediments were actually designed for him to accomplish Krishna's purposes. He put all his energies into establishing a preaching mission at Jhansi. Had a building that was about to be donated to him, the whole works, ready to go. Had one disciple. And then the person, the lady who was supposed to be somehow, instead of getting the building for his preaching mission, the League of Devotees, one powerful lady, wife of a politician, she wanted the building for a woman's skills center. It was a very big blow for Prabhupada. He even had deities there, ready to make a powerful start. Everything looked like it was happening right, and then all of a sudden, it all went downhill. This politician's wife, she wanted the building for her woman's skills center to train women in how to be industrious. It's very disgusting for Prabhupada. He's trying to flood the whole world with Lord Chaitanya's mercy, and someone's saying, no, no, we have a better purpose. That's what they told him. This is more practical, what we want the building for. So Prabhupada had to leave Jhansi, send the deity somewhere else. And then later he understood, Krishna didn't want me just doing a little scene in Jhansi, some small city in India. Krishna wanted me to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Therefore that endeavor failed. Prabhupada also described how he was meant to be one of the richest men in India, and that was foiled at every step by Krishna. He said, I thought, my Guru Maharaj has ordered me to preach in the West, so let me get a lot of money together and then I'll do it. He said, this was a personal argument I was having with Krishna. There was no disagreement about executing the order of my spiritual master, but I wanted to get a lot of money together and then do it, and Krishna wanted me to do it penniless. So he said, this is a personal argument. So Prabhupada giving us a glimpse of what life is like at the height of a devotional ladder. Things that you take as impediments, they're actually helping the devotee accomplish Krishna's purposes. So many problems come our way because we're proud and we forget how fallen we actually are, and we do not properly present ourselves before the deities, begging for their mercy in our family life, in our attempts to be Krishna conscious. All aspects of our devotional existence should be presented to the deities. We come before them helpless, forlorn about our past sinful activities, but also overwhelmed by the beauty of the deities. Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if there are some tough moments, you beg for mercy. And even if you think you're not going through a tough moment, you still pray to Krishna. I'm actually in bad shape, it's just I don't feel like it. So I'm still crying out to you. Or I know I feel like I'm in good shape now, but you know tomorrow it could be completely the opposite. Therefore, in advance, I'm crying out to you, please help me. Putting in advance notice. That way you always remain humble and realistic. Devotees have problems when their feet kind of leave the ground. They get caught up in the air, you know, and they start to have a real good, real high impression of themselves. Then there are problems. And problems always mean, I think I'm this body. It all begins and ends like that. After all is said and done, this is what does us in. And why do you identify with the body? Because of not taking shelter of Krishna. You have to become absorbed in something. What is your self-interest? As long as you think that your body and your mind are your self-interest, you're going to have problems. If you actually understand what your self-interest is, you'll take care of the spirit soul. And the spirit soul is taken care of by the nine processes of devotional service. But we have a hard time getting that in our heads. Very hard time. So the Vedic system is, ideally, first you should spend your life single, and then most will marry, and in your household life, you keep Krishna in the center very strongly. And then the last section of your life, you're back to the way you started. We come into this world with nothing, and we leave with nothing. So while we're traversing from birth to death to the various stages of life, we have to struggle to keep Krishna in the center. And Krishna is watching. How much do you really care for me? It's actually a great blessing to struggle to keep Krishna in the center. And you'll get better and better at it. As long as you follow the regular principles. That's the deal. Follow the regular principles. You follow the process of sadhana bhakti, and Krishna will personally watch over you through all the different passages of life. Then you'll begin to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When you say God is omnipotent, all-powerful, what does that mean? The only thing that Christians can tell you is that God being omnipotent means he just can do anything, like create the world. In 6 days. Krishna doesn't have to endeavor to create the world. Just by his will, it springs into action. Matter has no potency to act. How does matter start to do things? Because Krishna, in one of his expansions as Mahavishnu, glances over matter. You see, matter is on the other side of the causal ocean. The causal ocean is all spiritual. You've got matter, and then you've got the causal ocean, which is spiritual, then you've got the Brahma Jyoti, and then you've got Vaikuntha. And the topmost section of Vaikuntha is the Loka Vrindavan. So Mahavishnu is lying on the causal ocean, which is completely spiritual. And matter is far away. The matter does not touch the causal ocean. So from afar, the Lord, as Mahavishnu, glances over matter and impregnates it with living entities, as well as activating the matter to do something. Furthermore, the reflection of Mahavishnu's body becomes imbued or mixed with the matter and it activates the matter. So this is how Krishna seemingly contacts the material energy. Just by glancing and a reflection from his body, he never personally touches it. And certainly, Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha and Krishna in Vrindavan, they don't even have anything to do with glancing over the material energy. It's done by expansion and expansion and expansion. So when you say God is omnipotent because he can create, in Vaishnava eyes, that's a very small thing. The Vaishnava can tell everyone, when you say God is omnipotent, all-powerful, that means he's non-different from things in relation to him. all-powerful means that Krishna is the same as his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. This is real omnipotence. Therefore, when you hear about Krishna's activities, you have Krishna there. Last night, for example, we were discussing Krishna book at the loft with the devotees, and after we finished, we all felt such a sense of peace, not material peace, but spiritual satisfaction, an active spiritual satisfaction. We felt freedom from material desires and a taste of Krishna just by hearing about it. And we could see, we had factual realization, those who were there, that you didn't spend money to go to the movies, you didn't work hard and travel across town to go here or there. All you're doing is sitting on the floor hearing about Krishna and this inconceivable satisfaction descends upon you. This is the omnipotency of Krishna. He's non-different from talks about him. This is how we understand we are making advancement in God realization. We actually are dealing with the omnipotency of the Supreme Lord. In that, Krishna is not different from his name. That's why we chant Hare Krishna. Krishna is not different from his form. That's why we worship the Archivigraha, deity incarnation of the Lord. Krishna is not different from his pastimes. That's why we hear the Krishna book. Therefore, we easily say that Krishna consciousness is the height of spiritual experience. Any questions? Yes.
Why do we say no? The other incarnations of Krishna are not born.
These examples, they are to help you visualize. There's no cause and effect with Krishna and the spiritual world. Cause and effect is something that happens in the material world. First there was this, then there was that. But you have to explain it in words that you can understand. And you can understand cause and effect. But actually, there's no cause and effect in the spiritual world. As you understand it. First there was this, then that came into being. There's no bhava in the spiritual world, no becoming and unbecoming. Krishna is the unborn, whether as an expansion or a planary portion, or as Krishna, a Jyoti son of the Atma. Although I'm unborn, I still appear like I'm taking birth. This is a mystery. How the unborn seems to take birth. But you're also unborn. That's also a mystery. But your appearance in this material world is different from Krishna's. He's unborn, like you are. But he comes in this world in a spiritual body. You're unborn, but you've appeared in this material world covered with a body of matter. That's your rebellion uniform. I used to know. Yeah, I still know. There's one congregational devotee in Rotorua, and he had these, in his rougher days, he had these black leather pants with jewels down the, you know, down the outside in a line. So I asked him, so these are your party pants? Yeah. Whenever it's time for a party, I just put on these black leather pants with the, you know, the imitation jewels, you know, and I go party. So I said, you already have a party uniform, it's the material body. You wanted to party separate from Krishna, so you have a body. And look what it's done for you. So, when you're born in this material world, you take on your party uniform. and try to enjoy. Such a faulty uniform, though. When Krishna comes, Krishna is the eternal party. Spiritual body. So he comes as he is, even within the material world. Sometimes people wonder, why would God, when it comes to this insignificant world, and how could he do anything interesting amongst human beings? Well, that is the work of Krishna's pastime energy, Lila Shakti. Even in Krishna's activities amongst human beings, still he's unlimitedly attractive. Krishna is so attractive that although you know he's always going to win, still you're totally captivated. You know he's always going to succeed, still you're enthralled hearing about Krishna. You can read the same pastimes again and again in Krishna book, and still your appreciation only increases. In fact, after hearing about Krishna killing Bakasura, the duck demon, for example, splitting the duck demon's beak, still you'll be on the edge of your seat. You can't maturely understand it. I've heard it 15 times, Krishna killing Bakasura. But each time you hear it, it becomes fresher and fresher, and you get the suspense, you get the whole dynamics of the situation, although you've heard it millions of times. Because it's not material. There is experience in spiritual life. We've got to get this through our heads. Because otherwise, Maya is always broadcasting. Material life has got the experiences. Bhakti just has theory. Bhakti is just belief. But material life's got those parties, those experiences. You can really feel yourself like you exist. When there's sense gratification, you really feel you're alive. I'm doing something. Yes. And Krishna consciousness is a nice belief. Yeah, I believe in Krishna. But when I want experience, I turn to the material energy. This is our hell, self-created hell. Any other questions? Yes?
I'm a Krishna. I'm a gentleman. I just have a question about the boundaries of being secret, secret, and the boundaries.
He's a bear-like human being. Any other questions? Yeah.
If the external energy can turn into internal energy, does that mean that sort of religious activities fall in reverse of that?
Yes. Krishna says, you surrender to me, and don't worry, I'll take care of it all. All your sinful activities. Don't worry. You see, a human being must worry about sinful reactions. But if you surrender to Krishna, Krishna says, then you don't have to worry. I'll take care of it all. But otherwise, as a human being, you must worry. I've done so many horrible things. What will become of my future birth? No one thinks like that these days. They're so sunk down in past and ignorance. They don't think, my future birth. Oh, so what? So to be a normally intelligent human being, you're concerned how to atone. This is the subject of Prithvi Maharaj's discussion in the sixth canto with Shukadeva Goswami. He says, Shukadeva Goswami, you've described the gradual process for living entities to go back to Godhead, going through the whole universe and the upper planetary system, and then going back to Godhead from there. You've talked about that. Now please tell me how living entities can be rescued from the hellish planets at the bottom of the universe. And he presented to Shukadeva Goswami that there must be some system how they can be rescued from such hellish conditions, just like there's a system for them to go back to Godhead from the highest conditions in the universe. So Shukadeva Goswami explained, unless you atone for your sinful activities before your death comes, then they're horrible problems for yourself. Now, how do you atone? That's what an intelligent human being is concerned about. Do I do it through karma, pious activity? Do I do it through jnana, metaphysical speculation? Do I do it through bhakti? So Krishna says do it through bhakti, then don't worry. Therefore we want to be bhaktas, we want to convince Krishna. I want engagement in your service, and you kindly cleanse all these horrible things I've done. It's not that you're depressed. Oh, I did this, I did that, what will become of me? You mope around the ashram all day. Oh, I'm so sinful. Prabhu, can you do some service? Oh, I'm so fallen, I'm so sinful. I can't do anything. Prabhu, will you come to Archie? Oh, I'm just so fallen, I might as well go away, I'm just so sinful. That is material manifestation. But Vaishnava is full of spiritual manifestation. You can hear the songs of Narottam Das Thakur. He's always lamenting, I wasted my life willfully drinking poison. But the result of spiritual lamentation is your service increases. Material lamentation means your service decreases. Sometimes our devotees get into material lamentation and the service goes down. Devotees should never be depressed. Oh, what to do? Now, be active in Krishna's service. Let Krishna sort it out. Even if you're going through a bit of a tough time, it happens. Anything can be tolerated in good association. Prabhupada said that. So if you're having what appears to be a tough time, find some good association. And devotees should be forthcoming to give a soft shoulder, so to speak, to someone who's having a hard time. Because a lot of times, some devotees, they think, when they're having a hard time, I can't go to this Prabhu or that because they're heavy. Now, why should you think that someone who's going to tell you to chant Hare Krishna or take a spiritual solution is heavy? Basically what you're saying is, I want someone who, they'll tell me something about Krishna, but at the same time they'll understand the need for sense gratification. Those are the kind of devotees I want to associate with. Those are understanding devotees. They know that, yeah, you gotta chant around, but also the real problem is there's no sense gratification, and there has to be some facility for that. Water seeks its own level. You are who you associate with. Any devotee who's very serious should always surround himself or herself with devotees who are trying to go back to Godhead. Even a new devotee, after a while, being here, learns that this place is like a hospital with all different levels of patients. Now, if you're serious, you should try to associate with patients who are very serious about getting completely cured. That's your choice. Now, those who are trying to be serious devotees in a humble way, they should be on the lookout for devotees who are having a tough time, and you should learn how to offer some help to them in a way that they don't feel completely intimidated. It's not your fault that they feel intimidated, but they just think, oh, you're so serious, you got it so together, you never understand me. You're so great, and I'm so weak, you never understand me. No one is great. Everyone is weak in front of Krishna, but some are quicker to admit that, and that way they become strong by admitting they're weak. And they get strength from Krishna. So we want to associate those who are taking strength from Krishna. If we're serious about getting well. And those who are, by Krishna's grace, feeling somewhat confident about the Lord's mercy, you should be able to help others. This is the spiritual instruction contained in the third canto. When you see someone who is weaker than you, you try to help them. When you see someone on your level, you establish friendship. And when you see someone who is more advanced than you, you try to offer some service. This is the spiritual way of being personal. Any other questions? All right, I'll go right to the floor.